Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 252 of Storyteller Conclave. This is a show all about helping you run the best tabletop role-playing game that you can, whether you're a new storyteller or dungeon master learning the craft, or an experienced storyteller looking to take your game to the next level. I'm Sarah.
I'm Rob.
How are you doing, Rob?
Laughing still from the previous comment.
Yeah.
Just before the show, we were running some Romeo and Juliet, actually.
Romeo and Juliet, absolutely my favorite Shakespeare play.
Not mine.
Yeah?
I love Taming of the Shrew.
Okay, fair enough.
I love that.
I can see it.
Another Shakespearean play that I will forever have a special place in my heart is, I think it's not A Man for All Seasons. It might be A Man for All Seasons now that I think about it. But not for any, like, the normal thing. Mm-hmm. I went and saw it in Stratford, and the guy who was playing the father in one of the scenes, and it's hilarious because basically they're talking to the father, and they all know that they're being listened into by this other gentleman, right? And the father is supposed to – they're supposed to be basically having a picnic to kind of, push information that this other guy's listening to.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But the father keeps drinking. Well, the guy who is in the scene, who's playing the father, just keeps grabbing his glass while he's – listen to these guys, and all he says is so my daughter says.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the actor decided that he was going to play up the father. Basically, the father's getting drunk through this whole thing.
Yeah,
and the other two guys, because he keeps getting further and further into his list, until eventually both of the other actors break. The guy who's literally hiding behind a shrub that's on a Red Rider cart that he's wheeling slowly across just falls over laughing, and the audience breaks. Everyone breaks character, 100%. But he's still holding his glass, just kind of listlessly standing there, and then when it all goes silent, he goes, "So my daughter tells me." And everybody loses it again. I mean, it literally was a 5-minute laugh break middle of the play.
That's great.
I love those moments. I love when you can have those kind of things.
I saw Two Gentlemen of Verona at Stratford.
Oh, hell yeah.
I believe it or not, I don't remember absolute crap about that play, but I do remember that I enjoyed the hell out of it and that it was very funny.
Yes. Two Gentlemen is great.
My second favorite is definitely Much Ado About Nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the version with Denzel Washington as the prince.
Yes.
With all-star cast in there.
Oh, hell yeah.
Absolutely all-star cast in that.
Hell yeah.
But...
I've seen a lot of neat things. The Taming of the Shrew done in the 1950s. Edge was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The Tempest as a Orwellian kind of flip of post-World War One, if things went the wrong way, and it was very jackbooted, and but it still had all the power of the original story. Was just its theme wrapped around it, and it's beautiful, that kind of stuff.
Or my favorite version of Taming of the Shrew, 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah, no, seriously.
Yep.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Oh, so. Heath Ledger, we miss you so much, buddy.
We do. Good man.
Anyway,
beyond that, the
reason we were kind of talking about Shakespeare is because we were positing that the semi-prevalent YouTuber, I say he's very prevalent, Dungeon Craft.
Yes.
Professor Dungeon Master. Dungeon Craft. The channel's name is Dungeon Craft, and he's a big proponent of the OSR gaming style.
Yes.
Rob was saying that he's our Tybalt.
He's our Tybalt.
Narrative. I hate the word as I hate hell. All Montagues and you.
All storytellers and
all
you.
All storytellers and you. Because tonight we're going to be talking about OSR, which is Old School Renaissance or Old School Revival.
Yes.
And I mean, we've talked about it in adjacents quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's essentially the antithesis of our particular gaming styles. We're very narrative, cinematic, story driven, and that's what Storyteller Conclave has always kind of been about. I mean, it's the thing that we know, so it's the thing that we are trying to teach through this show.
Yeah,
you know?
remove the wall between you and your players. Get rid of the power dynamic. Well, not the power dynamic, but the perceived adversarial relationship that's going on there.
Yeah.
Write
backstory, write plots that can unfold in multiple different ways.
And, look be flexible.
For, yeah, exactly. All these sorts of things. And a lot of these things are very very antithetical to the OSR gaming style. So we haven't really gotten into, like, it's why you've never seen a system spotlight something like Dungeon Crawl Classics,
right,
or Old School Essentials, because we would just hate them. They're not our style of game. And that's not to say, and you're wincing.
No.
That's not to say that they're bad games.
Not at all.
But they're antithetical to both of our styles, both of our tastes.
Well, my thought was like we would do the mechanics, and then I would get to, well, I guess there's a setting technically, maybe.
Yeah.
It's fantasy. But that's it. Like that's what you get.
But tonight we kind of wanted to take the topic kind of head on and reach across the aisle a little bit and just kind of say, like, you know, what actually is OSR? What's, you know, what is it about it that has
kept people's attention?
Yeah, and kind of raised our hackles about it in a semi-joking way.
And at the same time, like, where did this rift happen? Why is this rift happening?
Right,
a little
right.
bit. So when we're talking about old school, we're talking about original D&D or chainmail style games. That is the old school, the core of where things came from. We are not talking about D&D editions. We're talking about D&D old box.
Yep.
Right. So if you're like, oh, I play D&D. No, you don't. You probably don't.
If it had a number next to it, no.
Yes. Yeah. If you look at it and it says an addition, mm-hmm. then that's not it.
If you weren't in high school in the early 80s, probably not.
Probably not. Probably not. Or you weren't playing with people who were in high school in the 80s who picked it up, you know, probably from some, like, relatively random location at the time mm-hmm. to get their hands on it mm-hmm. kind of a thing. But the question is it old school revival or is it old school renaissance?
Because it's kind of called both things. OSR kind of stands for both things. And I guess it really depends on what you're talking about. They're both valid.
Mm-hmm.
Old school revival, in that the revival is bringing back old games and
or
mechanics.
The mechanics, yeah.
You know, like in the sort of sense of like retro clones.
Mm-hmm.
This would be games like Old School Essentials or Dungeon Crawl Classics that try mm-hmm. as hard as they can to emulate the feeling and mechanics of something like first edition D&D.
Yep.
And then you've got the old school Renaissance half of things, which is new games that are using some sort of modern sensibilities, but try to reach back in their mechanics and design principles to emulate those sort of things with a new twist to them.
Yeah, like I dare say you could say an aspect of Morkborg.
Yeah,
you
know, Morkborg, I think,
is definitely within
Renaissance.
That vein. It is definitely within Renaissance. I think something like, what was the one that was just on the tip of my head?
Worlds Without Number, I think,
tends to be.
I have heard is squarely in the OSR camp.
But really, there's a core pillar set or belief set that kind of guides you to what OSR truly is.
Right, right.
Directs you in that. And I think you've broken them down very clean.
Now, I'm going to preface this by saying neither of us play OSR games. Neither of us are terribly enthusiastic about OSR games. So we're probably going to get some of this representation wrong. Let us know if you're listening to this, you know, hop on our Discord or tweet at us or something like that. You know, let us know where we can be better about this.
Because
we're
also coming from where we started.
Yeah, exactly.
And the kind of the perceptions thereof and how we drifted from it. So.
But the key pillars of OSR, as we understand them, are that, first off, your story is emergent through the game mechanics. Meaning that you're going to avoid, like, writing plot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a lot of the things we talk about, how to, you know, pre-prep your NPCs, pre-prep your plot, come up with a story for your campaign. All of these things are kind of antithetical to OSR gaming. You want your story to be emergent from the game mechanics. If the dice roll in a certain way, saying that something happens or something doesn't happen, that's what tells the story.
Yeah, the players are driving that with their agency via the mechanics.
Right. The second thing is it emphasizes player skill over character skill. Mm-hmm. From the standpoint of we are going to put puzzles and dilemmas and, you know, issues and problems in front of you, And this isn't up to you to say, well, I rolled the dice and my character figured it out, so give me the solution.
Mm-hmm.
No, give me the solution.
Right.
You, the player, have to solve this.
I dare say this reaches back even to the old tin and lead miniatures of wargaming,
mm-hmm.
where you were the commander
yeah.
of these armies. It was up to you to make sure they were positioned and that you had the right, you know, logistics and everything to back up the actions which you were moving into.
Mm-hmm.
Making a risky thing and hoping that the numbers work out was more than just a risk. It was silly and stupid.
Man, now I want to play Warhammer Fantasy again. Thanks, Rob.
See? That's what I'm talking about.
And then the last thing is advancement through achievement, not through vertical progression. Okay? Most of your character's advancement is going to be very flat.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get buckets upon buckets of hit points. You're not going to get brand new spells that can call down mountains on top of your enemies.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get some magic items. You're going to get some new armor. You're going to get followers, maybe mm-hmm. a keep, maybe some gold to buy these things with.
Mm-hmm.
But you yourself will remain relatively, you know, within the same power scope.
Yeah. An often argument made against other games where, like, yeah, it takes you a month and now you're level 20.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the adventuring day of 13 encounters per day... for a solid month, and yeah, I mean, you do that, you'd easily be level 20.
Yep.
So, how did we get here? Like, what, where did this rift between, like, how do we end up with a gaming community that has a contingent of people looking back at our roots, at our origins,
mm-hmm.
in these early gaming styles, and going, I yearn for those olden days?
It's evolution. It's change because of the pressures and the environments around it. It's not an improvement.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crafting itself to fit those things within the framework of the society that's Excorpion. So when we started, we had kings and nobles and lords playing with, you know, miniatures and, you know, and doing battles, you know, effectively like chess,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you had people who were then expanding on those because they were being brought into it. Commoners, if you will, you know, lesser kings, you know, of their own realms were now doing it themselves. And then as that ironed down to the folk,
mm-hmm.
it became more personalized. But once that folk then saw that they had friends who were involved, some of those friends weren't of the same ilk. They didn't come from the same mind frame and that therefore changed it. And narratively evolved things from that point.
Yeah, sure.
They wanted to know how those stories came about.
I think just like any other, you know, evolution in the game systems, how you get these offshoot game systems, you know, is that you get people who they have their core system, they have the thing that they like to do, and then they say, I want to, you know, I love, say, Dungeons and Dragons, but I want to be able to tell, you know, Star Wars stories with it. Because Star Wars is basically just D&D in space.
Mm-hmm.
You got space wizards, you got magic swords, you know, but, and you've got, you know, different wacky different species all interacting with each other. You should be able to do it, right? So let's homebrew. Oh, but the homebrew doesn't account for X, Y, or Z. Maybe there's a different system, or maybe I've homebrewed it so much that it looks like something different now. And now you've got a whole different system
mm-hmm.
set up for telling Star Wars stories.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then somebody goes, well, I want to run something that's another, you know, Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
You've already got this system for telling stories in space. I just need to strip these out of it and homebrew,
mm-hmm.
and bam. And it just evolves like amoebas. You know, it splits and mutates and splits and mutates.
Yeah.
And over 40 years, you know, since the 80s till now, you get a completely different evolution of gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got these narrative games like, what did we just do the other day? Wanderhome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't even have dice.
Mm-hmm.
There's no violence in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the way from its... But you can still trace it back to its origins.
Yeah.
It's a long and winding path, but you can find your way all the way back to chainmail.
Yeah, very much so. Very mm-hmm. much so. And I mean, I'm sure you could even go farther back than that. But that fundamental shift in gameplay was not only the people running it, but also the people playing it asking for something different. I mean, I made the joke that when the goths came in, they said, you know, you said, oh yeah, that's right. They saw Count Strahd and said, I want to be a sexy Count Strahd, and right. Vampire was born.
Right, yeah.
I mean, yes.
They played Ravenloft and went, what if we were the vampires? And that's how you get Vampire the Masquerade.
That's how you get vampires. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, but that's legitimately it. Like, what if we want to be the baddies? What mm-hmm. if we want to be the monsters? You know, how would I play this comic book mm-hmm. in D&D? You know, with all these, you know, crazy things.
I saw a cool movie the other day, and now I want to play it with my friends.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And all of that then brought in other elements. And as we got further and further into story, writers came around and said, well, there's actually ways to write those things and design them so that you have a mystery or you have an intensity mm-hmm. or a tension.
People who were cinemaphiles went, here's how you add drama. Mm-hmm. You know, and cinematic beats to your stories to give them that sort of, you know, pulpy dramatic flair.
Yeah.
And yeah, you end up with games like 7th Sea, and you end up with games like Vampire and whatnot. That.
Yep. How do you add clocks to your game mm-hmm. when you don't want your players to feel like the player is pushed, but you definitely want those characters to feel pushed?
Right.
You know. Okay, well, how are those successes going? Well, not going in the right direction.
But the further you evolve, the further you kind of, you know, split and mutate, mm-hmm. and you look less and less and less like the original progenitor of these games, you've definitely got a contingent of people who, and I hesitate to say that it's all old, you know, grognards.
It's not.
You know, because it's not.
It's definitely not.
There's a lot of appeal for OSR gaming for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the older generation is teaching the newer generation this, and they're sharing that sort of thing with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I dare say if you probably looked at Dungeon Craft's demographics, it's probably 18 to 24 is their biggest, is his biggest, you know, watchers.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got this contingent of gamers who look back on the progenitors of our gaming, who look on that first edition D&D, that old sort of West Marches, mm-hmm. grinder-style, hardcore dungeon.
Roguelike.
Almost sort of gaming style. And they yearn for the good old days.
They yearn for lighter. They don't want to be told the glamour story. They want to get in and fight.
Right.
They want to get in and be challenged.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there are people who don't like solo RPG PC games for the same reason. It's taking me too long to do something.
Right.
Can I just jump in and kill bugs?
The tutorial was 5 minutes long and I couldn't skip it. I refunded the game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. But that's the, you know, I mean, hey, that's cool. It appeals to different people, you know? So I guess the next question is, like, we're kind of looking at each other from across this sort mm-hmm. of divide of old and new. And I think, you know, personally, and this is one of the reasons why I've stayed away from OSR games quite a bit, is because on the surface, if you take a good hard look at them, they look a little scary from across the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
At
mm-hmm.
least to me, they do. And so I kind of want to talk a little bit about what each side looks at and sees in the other.
Okay.
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 So what do you think narrative looks like from the OSR side of the aisle? Put yourself in their shoes and as an OSR player and look at narrative gaming that we like and see what they see.
I mean, so I know one of the big things that we talked about is the fact that OSR people are seeing it as emergent. So anything that's being presented to them that isn't emergent
mm-hmm.
doesn't seem to fit. Like when the moment they hear the word storyteller, at that point, the story isn't being created by the players.
Yeah.
It's being presented.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that idea, so that the dice are being taken out of the mechanics of that. There's mm-hmm. there's a lot less agency for the players, a lot more predetermined.
Yeah.
And I think that even you could even say that starts earlier than that by examining how the characters themselves are created.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
In that sense, like, it's not... It's whether they're part of the story going into it or just here are the characters.
Mm-hmm.
This is the world.
Yeah, yeah. Because characters, I mean, especially one of the big things you see in OSR games a lot is the random rolling of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you see a lot of this, like Dungeons & Dragons, of course, still has a lot of this in its DNA.
Yes.
But you've seen a lot of that go by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be, and I know you and I remember the days, where mm-hmm. you rolled 3d6 mm-hmm. six times to get your attributes.
No matter how crappy they were.
Now, if your storyteller was being nice, if mm-hmm. your DM was being nice,
mm-hmm.
they'd allow you to roll 4d6 and drop the lowest.
Out of each one of those, yeah.
And or... They would, and this we became more and more and more casual as our D&D games went on about this, where we got to the point where we were rolling three sets mm-hmm. of 4d6, drop the lowest.
Yeah, that's super casual.
And you could assign them wherever you wanted. You didn't have to take them in order.
Yeah.
Right?
I remember one game very early on where basically we were creating characters. We rolled, I can't remember how much dice it was, but effectively it was... 3d6 mm-hmm. minus, you know, for all the stats, minus one.
Oh, wow.
So you had one less die than 3d6 for each stat, but you rolled them all together, and then you just paired up your dice.
Huh. Okay. Because
you had a total numbers that was produced.
Yeah.
But you had to use the dice to create your characters, and no greater than 18.
Okay.
So it was, in theory, you could have some amazing stats,
yeah.
but you could also have some very, very crappy stats.
Yeah, exactly.
But I thought that was an interesting way of doing it. But that generation is random. It's emergent when it comes together. And I think that's one of the core components, and there's two things. One thing you did say, but I'll come back to that one.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm going to put a pin in the word casual and just put it up here on
the
wall
for
us.
Right.
But the emergence of characters or the emergence of NPCs and the whole thing, I assure you that someone literally looked at us and said, quantum ogres, and cringed, right? Those ogres are in that room. They're not in the other room. What are you doing? Right? That is not how it works, because OSR is all about where is it here or not.
Right. The player made the choice to go left instead of right. How dare you move those ogres that they avoided?
Yeah. Or
to put them in front of
it
them.
It was a random roll. That's why the ogres are there. You didn't choose to put wolves instead of ogres.
Right. Yeah, Knox in the Box says, aren't we supposed to embrace the crappy roles, the flaws? Isn't that good character development and story opportunity? Exactly.
Now, hold on. I will say this.
Hmm?
They would look at things like mouse guards where you're choosing to fail or choosing to accept your failures as advancement. It's kind of a little throwback.
Yeah, they'd never be playing mouse guard in the first place.
100%, but yeah. At the same time, that is failure.
Yeah, but you're choosing to. But you're choosing to.
Sometimes you are and sometimes you're not.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're just accepting that failure.
But anyways, yeah. So there's... not only do they hate the whole quantum ogres thing and stuff like that, you know, like you were talking about with rolling the stats and stuff like that. This is where, like, the sort of... You said the casualification, you know,
yes.
of character development comes in, where you start moving from, like... even rolling stats to standard array, so that and I like
yeah.
standard array.
I don't think there's a problem
for making characters, because everybody then has their own, like, they've all more or less got balanced stats with each other. I like it because nobody likes to feel like they are the heel of the group because
yep.
they had a bad run of luck with their dice.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And then they're going to be struggling against their character, feeling ineffectual for the next however long your campaign runs.
Right.
And then you as the storyteller then feel obligated to, like, oh, I'll throw him a bone, I'll give him a magic items, make him stop whining, it'll compensate for some of his bad stats, you know?
Right, but then again, they didn't earn it.
They didn't earn it. You did it to try to balance the game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's just my mentality. The OSR mentality is you rolled low, suck it up.
Yeah. But I think there's something to be said between that twist of the dial, right? Between OSR and the people who want to min-max,
mm-hmm.
right? And who say, like, well, what if I, you know, like modern today, like in non-OSR games where people are like, well, I want to play a character with low stats. And they're like, why would you even think about doing that in D&D?
Mm-hmm.
Like, who would choose low stats? You should really talk to that player. Like, is there a problem with that? And the answer is, are they role-playing to choose to be low-statted? Or is it the way... But again, it's still choice.
Yeah. I mean, I...
but I'm focused more less on them and more on the people who tell you that you need to be perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's the turn of the dial that changed out of OSR was those people trying to perfect their characters. And, like, I'm going to keep rolling until I get the right character.
Right, right. And I think that brings us to our next point.
Yeah.
You know, we emphasize player skill over character skill. And I think game systems that emphasize character skill and character build and that meta build of, like, mm-hmm. how do you build a good warlock, you know, that allows you things to point by your stats to make them all optimum, to choose your character species so that it's optimum.
Yeah, I'm the perfect battle mage.
Right, and to even pick battle mage to begin with.
Right.
I started reading over Dungeon Crawl Classics because mm-hmm. I was curious. I kept seeing it being brought up on Reddit. And you'd love it. It's such a great game. So I downloaded a copy of it, and... like, in the first page, they're like, this isn't one of your, you know, your kiddie games where you're going to pick your class and your species and stuff like that. You're going to start by rolling 3d6 and only 3d6. None of this drop the low crap.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to take the first six rolls you get in order. You're going to start with your strength and end with your intelligence or your charisma or whatever,
mm-hmm.
And you will like it. And those are the stats you get. And then after you are done rolling your stats, you will compare that to this chart to see which classes you qualify for.
Yeah.
You don't get to say, I'm playing a bard. You roll your stats and you hope you qualify for bard.
It feels like college admissions back in the 80s.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. But, like, I can see OSR people, like, looking at this going, like, man, you know, how many bumpers and rails do you need on your character to outfit them with the best class and the mm-hmm. best species and the best stats in the right way with the best feats and the best spells to make sure that you never, ever have a problem you ever need to worry about?
Right. Or you have the best comp. You've uh-huh. got the right fighter with the right mage and the right healer
yeah.
and the right rogue so that you've got your bases covered so that if somebody else joins the campaign, you're like, we really don't need you.
It's like with a strong enough character and with a strong enough group comp, you can sleepwalk through a game, sleepwalk mm-hmm. through a campaign and just never need to engage with anything.
No.
Because you've always got the right tool for the job. You've got all your bases covered, you know?
Yeah.
And OSR just isn't like that. It's all about getting yourself into trouble, and if that results in the death of your character, then okay, that's what happened, buddy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I mean, but suck it up, you know?
And to that end, you don't get to sit down at your game and be like, I can't remember how to play my character, can you kind of remind me?
Right, because if you're not playing to, you know, your optimal,
right.
if you don't know the mechanics of your character at very least...
Right.
But probably the entire game system. If you're not engaging with the game on a mechanical level,
yeah,
you're just grist for the mill.
Mm-hmm.
You're mincemeat.
Yep.
In
yeah.
an OSR game,
the threats are real. You don't have much.
And like, you know, love everybody I've ever sat at a table with. Sans a few, but boy, the number of times, even in recent history, that I've heard, "What dice do I roll again?" How long have we been playing this game?
Mm-hmm.
This is your character. This mm-hmm. you're the only one with this ability in the group. You should know your abilities. But because I am a generous storyteller, it is that die right there. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. add this.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't get away with that in OSR.
No. It's much more swift. It's much more on top of it. And I mean, and there's something to be said to the pointing of that.
Yeah.
And to the frustrations behind it. The idea of OSR being beer and pretzels just doesn't seem right.
You know, I'm actually going to contradict you on that. Because I actually think OSR makes a great beer and pretzels game. Just from the standpoint of, you don't have to worry about deep plot, story, things going on. It's, in a way, it's so... Think to Merkborg, all right? Merkborg is a great example. Mm-hmm. Do you think you could get serious about Merkborg?
I know some people who would.
It's a very artistic book. There's like three mechanics in the entire game, man.
What I'm saying is that it's going to come down to the stress of combat, the stress of losing what you have.
But that's the thing, though, is that in a lot of these OSR games, their life is very cheap. You know, mm-hmm. you come there is a thing called a funnel.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
Where you come in with a stack of like 20 characters.
Mm-hmm.
And the storyteller, sorry, the dungeon master.
There we go.
Runs you through a meat grinder of a dungeon.
Yep.
Your characters will be dying left and right. You need that stack of 20.
Yeah.
Okay? And whichever one comes out the other end of the dungeon is the one you end up playing in the campaign.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that you get attached and you get serious about not wanting to lose the things that you have? With certain OSR games. I mean, I can see you could.
I mean, you could. If I'm you're not saying playing it doesn't the meat happen. Grinder.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just saying is that if I sit down to play Merkborg, buddy,
see, I would
I'm
say,
not I'm not getting attached to anything or anyone.
But if I'm grabbing my people who are narrative.
And if my character dies in a horrible way in a game of Merkborg, that's exactly what I expected walking in.
I'm with you. But if you, again, if you take a group of narrative people and you bring them to Merkborg, they're attached to their character.
Sure. Sure.
Then that's a mistake.
but that's not what we're talking about.
No.
We're talking about what narrative looks like to OSR people.
And that's what I'm saying is, yeah. is that they're the attachment.
Oh, the narrative people are going to get attached.
They are attached. They were attached before they dice hit the table.
Yeah. Oh, honey, you wrote a backstory for him, didn't you? Never do that. Never
Not
do
even that.
That.
Like, I knew what I wanted to play before I came to the mm-hmm. table. Whoa. That's what?
That's way too much planning ahead, yeah.
Yeah, session zero is where you make your character.
Yeah.
And you decide, and you get to decide then, based upon stats, what you get.
Yeah, and your backstory is rolling on three random tables, buddy. That's all you get.
And the only thing you should be upset about is when your character dies and you lose that chest piece. Now, I will say this. Advancement through physical items
mm-hmm.
back in D&D was a huge thing, because I remember... literally a paladin in one of our games practically flipping the table when his plate mail got acid on it.
Ooh.
And the DM said, yeah, it's useless. He's like, no, I can get it repaired. He's like, no, like acid destroys your, it's regular plate.
Mm-hmm.
It's not adamantine. It's not anything special, but it's magical. I had it enchanted. Yes, you did. Because you had silver filigree, and yeah, you can scoop some of that up, but you're going to have to go get it remade. Do you have any idea how much that cost? Oh, how many? Like, he was pissed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, stormed out of the game pissed because he took a heavy acid attack that nearly killed him and wasted his armor.
Mm-hmm.
He then spent, between then and the next game session, arguing with the DM where in the rules it said his armor was destroyed.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, this is too much.
Take a deep breath, buddy.
So when...
Why you got to be mad? It's just a game.
Exactly. But the thing is that, like, from a narrative perspective, that rarely happens.
Yeah.
Like, I struggle to think of a single game
mm-hmm.
that we've spotlighted where loss of gear isn't a consequence.
Yeah.
Right, that players are like, well, shit, I'll take that consequence, or I'm going to subvert that consequence and take a different one, or something like that. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to handle it in a different way, or I'm just going to pick up another die and try again, right? Because I have that capability, right? I am sure the OSR people are like, wait a second, the dice just said that you lost your shit, and you're just going to pick up another die and say no? Or you're going to swap that?
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not what happened right there. Right, that's, you lost your gear, it's gone. Sorry. That's what happens. It's over, right? So that progression of horizontally, like, where you're just getting things is helpful, but, like, not necessary. Whereas, like, your vertical progression, like, the idea that you lose stats when a ghost touches you was devastating.
Oh, yeah.
You were losing vertical progression.
Uh-huh.
How are you going to survive?
Right.
Now that your paladin is less, like, are you even a fighter when your strength drops below 14?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
It's terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, it was things like that that really asked the question, like, oh, crap, like, this, I can't regain this. I have to go recover this, you know, in some way. So having this concept where, like, all I have to do is hang out and I suddenly become a god.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
God, I saw that. I saw that. We only made it to, like, 6th or 7th level or something like that in my D&D game before we switched over to Savage Worlds.
Yeah.
And I was already seeing that power curve of, like, oh, no.
And in mine, we were 10.
Oh, we were 11 when we ended. I pushed you to go to 11 just because there was the 6 level spells are so cool. I just wanted my wall of ice and I wanted my freezing sphere. That there was some really cool ice spells there, and I was playing an ice wizard. That's all.
Yeah, but I also feel that at that point, like, literally OSR people would be sitting there going, "Oh, for God's sakes, how long is a turn going to take?"
Right.
Do you even care what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got, like, 40 spells in your repertoire, and you can reset them whenever you want. Come on.
Well, aside from the fact that, like, D&D becoming a combat-heavy game is a complete departure from the OSR mindset to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Because in OSR, I mean, because you are so fragile and life is so cheap, and your progression is so horizontal rather than vertical, you don't ever become spongy.
No.
You don't ever get those godlike spells. And so your choices are typically, how do we avoid, circumvent, or subdue a threat?
Or throw things between us and them.
Right, rather than ever confront it head on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas in D&D, you've just got buckets of hit points and godlike spells, so it's like, of course we're going to fight it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Here's how to write a balanced encounter to make sure that your party wins every fight.
We're just going
to
go take out the god.
Yeah.
We're not going to fight his minions.
Yeah.
We're just going to go straight after the god.
Fights are not there to threaten your players with death. They are there to attrit resources from them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How do I cut down my group so that the fight is meaningful?
Exactly.
You always hear that.
Nuke the first thing they do. Don't let them long rest before it.
Mm-hmm.
Throw multiple encounters in front of them so that they... Yeah.
I even made that commentary in our Discord. Somebody was asking about things. It's just like, oh, like, well, we've got this thing, but I want the fight at the end between the two player groups to be unique. I'm like, well, then make the resources their sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just, they only get one long rest and two shorts during those encounters. They can choose when they want to use them.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's either they have to do these challenges weak and choose to take their long rest right before the end, or squeeze in a long rest, and now they're going into the last fight with a little less resources.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole thing. Like,
yeah.
Now there's balance. Now there's decisions to make.
Right.
So,
but the idea of throwing multiple combat encounters, multiple challenging combat encounters in front of your players in an OSR game is just asking for a TPK.
Yeah.
Because most OSR games, the way that they're set up, if you put strength against strength, numbers against numbers, the players, someone's going to die every time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, all right.
Flip
the script. What does it look like from the other side of the aisle? What does OSR look like to us from a narrative standpoint?
Brutal.
Brutal.
You use the word casual when you talked about narrative.
Yeah.
That it's casual. OSR has never felt casual to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's always felt intense because the intensity comes from needing to be involved. Very involved.
Yeah.
It feels like a madhouse. Like, you've got to be part of it at all times. You have to be on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's often the perception that you, not only that, but, like, it is adversarial between the DM and the players in that sense. Like, if the players aren't on, they're going to die, right? And in that sense, it is the funnel that gets presented. That is the visibility that you get out of something like this. Everything is lethal. Everything is hard. Decisions have to be careful and chosen. And it's where the whole planning and making sure you've got all the gear you need and all the stuff before you go into the dungeon comes from.
Sure.
You know, whereas in narrative, it's like, don't worry about that. Don't worry about it.
We'll do a flashback. You'll have all the gear you want.
You know what? You can pick whatever your gear as long as it fits within the slots you have in your character
sheet. Yeah, exactly.
You know, let's simplify this. I'm sick and tired of this
crap. OSR people looking at Blades in the Dark gear system and just like just losing sleep over it, you know?
Well, I mean, at the same time, it's still a resource. It's like, there's elements of that that are still tactically important.
Sure.
But it's not even the same.
It's still a game mechanic, but it's a very, very forgiving game mechanic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know that I agree that this is kind of where the adversarial storyteller comes from, because your DM isn't the one choosing to do bad things to the, you know, to the players.
It's a perception.
It's a perception, yeah.
The truth of the matter is, if they are, it's not OSR.
Exactly.
Right, that's the whole thing.
They are railroading you. But I made the comparison that, like, OSR is not deadly like a murderer, it's deadly like space.
Yeah.
Space doesn't want to kill you. Space doesn't care if you live or die.
Correct.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Space is just not going out of its way to be hospitable to you with things like air.
No. It's not going to just give you a pass.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Because in OSR, they're just a ref.
Oh, my suit's punctured. Sounds like a you problem, buddy.
So true. And I think that's something to be said about the randomness of things. Mm-hmm. Like, even adventures are written in such a way in OSR that they are procedural. The map is set. These are the things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you make it to the last room and you don't have the green key that was in a room that you didn't go to, well, you better go find it.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't just show up in that room.
Yeah.
Because you've spent 3 sessions in the dungeon.
We're not doing quantum ogres. We sure as hell ain't doing quantum key.
No. You better go find it.
Yeah.
Right?
All the clues are there. Figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that's...
And again, player skill over character skill.
Right.
Can I make a roll? No.
Yeah, I remember reading about hex crawling, mm-hmm. you know, where it was literally like, we have this giant map, we've been hex crawling from one side of this kingdom to the other, right, to try and find this thing. 55 hexes later, we still haven't found the cave.
Jeez.
And we were just like, can we just get to the damn cave? It's been 2 years
uh-huh.
that we've been moving across this, and... The DM was just like, I mean, do you want me to tell you where it is? Like, because that's, like, I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not how this is played out. Like, we've had all these adventures. He's like, yeah, we've done all these adventure stuff. But, like, we haven't, like, progressed. Like, there's been a lot of story. And there was the whole argument was, like, the one player was like, I've been looking forward to at least getting to this cave that we've been meaning to get to since the beginning.
Yeah.
And we've never made it there.
Yeah.
To do the one thing that we set out to do. We did a lot of things, but not that. And it was just because, like, we didn't take this pass that was on the map.
Right, right.
We went
left when you should have gone right.
Not even that. We took the pass, and it snowed in, so we couldn't take it.
Oh, geez.
So we had to go a different route, and that took us a whole different way around.
Yeah.
And we just never made it back to that path.
And how did you know that the pass snowed in? Was that a random roll?
Yep.
Yeah. So dice screwed you,
mm-hmm.
and 2 years later, you still hadn't recovered.
Yep. Yep. Out of choice.
Yep.
And it was one of those things where it's just like, this is how the game is played. You have to be invested in that, though. You have to know that that's the way it's going to be, right? And... I mean, I dare say when narrative looks at OSR, there's a certain sense of... There's a certain sense that players aren't committing themselves, but that's not so much as it is players are not consenting. because the consent is implied.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we talked about that in the BDSM episode, that a lot of times you know what you're getting into with OSR. That's the idea behind it.
Right,
right. So you're already consenting because you have knowledge, because you read the book and you know how the game is supposed to be played.
Yeah.
I assure you, when I look at Morkborg, am I consenting to this?
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm consenting to the mechanics 100%. Definitely. I understand how that's going to work. That doesn't tell me that it's going to take me 26 things to get through to the one thing that the game started with, the concept.
Right.
Or whatever.
Right.
So I think there is some... I think one of the things that it has as a detriment is the same thing that narrative has.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that players don't always know the game they're getting into.
Mismanaged expectations.
Yeah, but it can be a little worse at times because it is so swift to make those decisions.
Yeah.
Like, they come a lot faster.
Yeah, sure. It's toss the dice and then bam, that's what reality is now, you know?
Yeah.
I see the appeal, I do, but to me that randomness always just kind of fell thin. Like, I'm that type of person who needs things to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
I need an explanation for things.
Mm-hmm.
All the way down to, like, when I was in school, I was always that bad student that asked the teacher, why do I need to know this? And it's not because I was being a jerk about it. It was just because I wanted to know what the application was, you know? What is the purpose of this knowledge so I understand where and how to apply it in my life? And I'm kind of the same way about stories where it's like, what, hold on a second. These people are chasing us. Why are they chasing us? You know, mm-hmm. What is it they truly want? What is their background causing them to want this thing? You know, et cetera, et cetera.
There's ogres. They're up in your face.
I need to know those things.
Right.
And I mean, sure, maybe sometimes the explanation is as simple as they're ogres. They're hungry.
Yeah.
Food is a very simple motivator. Cool. I understand that. You know. But when we start getting into politics, like, yeah, I mean, I want the hows and whys. And if you're tossing dice for these things, like, mm-hmm. You said it was sunny and warm yesterday and now the pass is snowing in? Like, yeah, well, yeah, that's what the dice said. Oh, okay. Cool. That's randomness. It makes no sense. It's just a wild fluctuation in reality, you know, from 0 to 10 and back to 0 again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe you call that Michigan weather, but... sometimes I just call that BS, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then other times, like, I always think back to your 7C game, you mm-hmm. know, where we prepped and 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 then made our proposal to that noble, and you rolled a bunch of dice and they all came up crappy.
Mm-hmm.
And all of our progress for like 4 or 5 game sessions was wasted
mm-hmm.
as he just turned us away. And we were like, well, that didn't feel good.
No. You know?
And whenever you leave big momentous occasions down to dice rolls, that's always what I think of, is that exact moment and how that felt. That left a big impression on me.
And I dare say that is part of the divide.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the people who left those sessions went, how do I solve that in this? How do I find a way to make... That would never happen in a movie.
Right.
How can I make this feel like a... That would never happen in a heroic story. How can I make that happen?
Yeah. I think if you want to boil down the whole OSR versus narrative argument, I think that's really what the heart of it is right there. Is that OSR people are going to look at that random die roll and go, cool, that's how the story went. Let's roll with it.
Yeah.
And narrative players are going to go, that felt bad.
Yeah.
That felt bad. I don't feel good about that. That should have turned out in our favor.
Right.
You know?
We worked hard for it. We deserve the success. And I dare say that's the key, is what does fun equal?
Right. Does fun equal the struggle or does fun equal the payoff?
Right. Does fun equal an escape from reality?
Yeah.
From verisimilitude. A alternative of, well, I'm trying to remember... I'm trying to remember where it originally came from, but it was always the, well, that can't happen. He can't just die like that, like the kid saying that to the storybook reader.
I want to say that was Princess Bride, you know?
It was before that. Because in Princess Bride, he doesn't rewrite the story. He just pauses and like, what do you mean? Like, yeah, that's what's happening.
What does he mean? What does Fezzik mean he's dead?
Right.
He can't be dead.
Right. But the story
Who kills Humperdinck?
He doesn't change the order of the game. The difference is where the kid gets upset and you're like, okay. So then the dawn breaks, and upon the hill with 1,000 riders is Gandalf.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has come to save them. Like, okay, there you go. There's your heroic shift.
Yeah.
You know, and suddenly it feels better, right? Because why... Why, Hans Christian Andersen? Why, Brothers Grimm? Do we need our fairy tale stories to be grim and horrific? Why must we be afraid of the dark?
Because the darker the shadow, the brighter the light. Or vice versa.
Not according to the Grimms. Go back and reread their original work and you will hate it.
No, I'm afraid of it.
Exactly. You don't want to read it. You want the Disney version.
Yeah.
Some people don't.
Mm-hmm.
Some people want to know what happened to Snow White.
Oh, God, yeah.
Some people want to know what happened to Sleeping Beauty. Some people want to know what happened to Little Mermaid. Or Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah, yeah.
They want to know what happened to the witch who tried to cook them. And that's it right there.
Yeah.
Why are those stories different? And the answer is... Because we need them to be at times.
Because Little Mermaid was Hans Christian Andersen, right?
No. I don't believe so. I'm terrible at original laws.
Whoever wrote the Little Mermaid was painfully in gay love with somebody else. And it was an allegory for walking amongst the, you know, walking on land amongst the straight people, but it was painful every step.
Right, right.
You know, but they were able to fit in. They were able to be one of them, join their world.
Right. And sometimes if you can understand that and accept that, then sometimes but the difference is, and this is for me, is the difference. When you're reading a book, it's you. When you're telling the story, you're telling it to another person,
mm-hmm,
or persons. And you have to craft it with them in mind. So when you're telling scary stories at the campfire,
mm-hmm,
you're terrifying people.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that that's the story that's being told.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you're all sitting around on a camping event and someone's like, I've got a story to tell, and someone says, is it a scary story? And you stop for a second and go, yeah, it kind of is. What if it is? I don't want a scary story. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, right there. That pause. Because now there are others involved, and everyone has to be on that page.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
So.
And Knox confirms it was Hans Christian Andersen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yes. I thought that was correct, but I wasn't confident enough to say for sure.
Yeah.
And I want to say, like, he was painfully in love with, like, Ernest Hemingway or something like it, another name you would know.
Yeah.
It was Little Mermaid was essentially a long, sad gay love letter to that person, that ended in tragedy, because of course all, you know, gay stories back then had to end in tragedy. All right. So I think we've danced around the divide between the two of these concepts, narrative gaming and OSR gaming. How do we reach across the aisle? What does a middle ground look like? What can we agree on between these two gaming styles, you know? Because I think, as always, the truth kind of lies somewhere in the middle, you know?
Well, I mean, we're still talking about an evolution. We have a core that things started from and where things have drifted past to, but what can we still take and see today, mm-hmm, in a different architecture?
Yeah.
That holds some of those original principles. I mean, enough of them that it feels this original.
Because I'll tell you honestly, especially after doing today's episode, I see the appeal. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would seek out an OSR game,
mm-hmm,
but I think if somebody were like, we're going to run Merkborg, I'd be like, I'm down.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it, you know?
Yeah, like, I see the appeal of Thirsty Sword Lesbians.
Yeah.
I don't think I could run it. I don't know if I could feel comfortable 100% just rent going out and playing it with a group.
Yeah, sure.
But I see it. I understand it. I respect it.
Yeah, exactly.
Go freaking play the shit out of it.
And don't get me wrong. Like, I wouldn't be like, I'm down to play Merkborg because I want a meat grinder, you know, style game or anything like that. Like, I'm not here to engage with hardcore mechanics I am here because Merkborg seems like a fun, light game, and the idea of don't get too attached to your character seems kind of fun for the setting.
As I set Pirate Borg down and go, I don't know if I'll play it, but I might try run it
Pirate
once.
Pirate Borg is such a beautiful book. It was such a good book.
But I respect it. And I respect the authors and the right and the art. Yeah,
look at
that. Yeah, I know. I love it. I love it too. But like, at the same regard, we can look at something like, Cities Without Number or Worlds Without Number, X Without Number, if you will, and see the core elements that are there. One of the key things is the building out of everything through random, if you want.
Yeah, sure.
It's all there.
They're like, Stars Without Number, I remember us raving about, like, the entire back end of that book, and the free version of it, too, having just charts upon charts upon charts to be able to just create very cohesive star systems with cultures and climates and trade routes between them and conflicts between the cultures on the planet and other planets, which ones were starfaring, which ones were planet bound. And I mean, you could just with a toss of a handful of dice and 2 hours with this book, you could flesh out a campaign's worth of stuff. It's all there for you.
Yeah. Cyberpunk's got a lot of OSR feels to it in the way that the mechanics are that crunchy depth, and even for character creation, you're stuck with what you've got.
Yeah, but you've also got, like, three different levels of character creation you can do.
Sure.
You know, you've got that, like, easy casual of, like, I just want to, you know, build a quick character and just get into the game, whatever. All the way down, there's a middle ground sort of version of it, and then there's a, you randomly roll everything, and you are stuck with what you got.
That's what you got, yeah.
And hope you made a good Netrunner there, if that's what you wanted to play, because, you know.
And Traveler has that fragility. Has that, like, thinness of who you are in this vacuum of space.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, they flat out say, don't be firing guns in your ship. Don't do it.
No, yeah.
Don't do it. Like, you want to be sucked through a pinhole?
God, I remember Battletech, you know?
Yeah.
People pulling out katanas and stuff like that, and I'm like, oh, look at the weeaboo over here with their katana. Like, yeah, well, katanas don't punch holes in bulkheads.
So we did Dune,
TTRPG.
There's a new Dune MMO coming out, basically. Survival.
It looks pretty cool, actually.
One of the key points to that is the whole lasers versus shields. So I saw this thing where they, like, we had to adjust cannon.
For those of you who lack perspective here, in the Dune setting, if a laser hits a shield, it causes a nuclear explosion.
Either in the gun, the shield, or both.
Or both, or somewhere between. We don't know.
Yeah, because
it's random.
Because basically the way the shields work is like this quantum mix that's being held together in kind of a weird state that can deflect anything but can allow certain things through at various momentums.
It's based on how much kinetic energy they have. So, like, a sword could get through, but, like, a bullet is moving too fast to blow through the shield, so it bounces.
Right. Or thuds. But the thing is that a laser is light. It really isn't mass.
It's energy.
It's just energy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't know what to do about that except to become part of it and combine. And in that, it can't handle it, and therefore it splits instantaneously.
And you get a gigantic explosion.
Correct. So, in the canonical world, everyone knows not to pull out a las rifle if shields are involved. You grab your swords, and that is just the way things are agreed upon. Right? But they were like, we can't control that in an MMO. Someone's going to pull out a laser gun and shoot it at someone who's running up to them with their sword and shield
indiscriminately
on.
In PvP, you just
so
have, yeah.
The one thing they added to the story was that las guns have a built-in safety system that when they're pointed at a shield, they will not fire.
Right.
And yes. I'm like, okay.
That makes sense, actually.
That is a fantastic, simple break of canon.
Yeah.
But at the same time, holds all of the other components of itself together.
Right, right. Right. And they're not saying nuclear explosions don't happen all of a sudden, breaking canon. They just say, we were smart about it, and we put safeties on these guns.
Right, right. And that simple little brew takes care of the problem.
Yeah.
You know, of it won't happen. I would dare say that pretty much anyone who runs a Dune tabletop game should include that side rule.
Probably, yeah.
Because someone is going to do that in a Dune game
at some
point.
What are you talking about? All I need is a simple shield generator and a las pistol just to make a nuclear bomb? Awesome. Sign me up.
Yeah, that's how I'm going to kill all of the people that I need to kill in this game.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, except for the fact that the entire Landstrahd would just disown you and all of your things.
Oh, you would be persona non grata in an instant for even thinking it.
You literally wouldn't exist anymore. Yeah. Like, they'd boot you out of the universe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, instantly. They'd find a new way to take care of you. Yeah.
Your name would become a killing word. Only the thing getting killed would be you.
Yeah. Just you. Just you. In a box. Yeah. So, I guess the final question then from Storyteller Conclave is, what can we learn from OSR?
I mean, I think first and foremost, don't be afraid to loosen your grip on the story. And just let randomness happen, even during character creation. I think there is definitely something to be said for emergent story from random occurrences.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything has to be scripted. Not everything has to be written down. And quite frankly, if you're not writing everything down, you're saving yourself some work.
Mm-hmm.
I know I get stressed out about, is my story crafted perfectly to perfection?
Right.
Will I have the right narrative beats and the right twists and the right amount of complexity? Not too complex, not complex. Man, if I just had made up some random charts or referenced some random charts someone's already written.
Yeah.
I could probably have just as good of stories.
Yeah. Yeah. And I dare say that there are so many games out there that handle things in that manner,
mm-hmm.
Brindlewood Bay handling mysteries in a very light touch way.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. I always go back to that in my mind frame of, like, you don't have to heavy hand a mystery.
Yeah, you just put up a bare scaffolding and you say, work within this scaffolding and just hand wave, the rest. Let the dice fall where they may.
It's not even hand waving.
I'm not saying hand wave. Hand wave is a bad word. Let the dice fall where they're going to, and just as long as they land within the framework. If they're not in the framework, just nudge them gently.
If that, or just accept what ideas they come up with. That seems good enough to me.
Yeah, and just improv the rest.
You figured it out. Great.
Yeah.
You know? What does that mean, though?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where does that lead you to?
Right.
So, those types of things are in there as well, like the stress mechanics and things like that, where it's like, the people are stressed out. That happened. Okay. You're in the corner, shaking. Accept that as a character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you have a condition, don't fight it. Roll with it.
Yeah, don't get upset like, I'm suboptimal now. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
I remember my Mouse Guard character. I mean, I played for an entire year of that game. With this, I told the storyteller, I'm like, don't let me heal the sick condition.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna probably retire the character at the end of the the end of it, and that'll be the reason why.
Yep. Yeah, and I would say along the lines of the OSR in that side is like, don't be afraid to challenge your players. CR ratings be damned.
Mm-hmm.
Right, if your players are gonna go fight a dragon, it's gonna suck.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe they better find something better to do than try to fight the dragon. Maybe bargain with the dragon or circumvent the dragon.
Yeah.
Or lure the dragon into an ambush so they have the upper hand. But go fight a dragon in an OSR game? I don't think so, Susan.
And in a narrative game, why not make it super challenging?
Yeah.
Give them a reason to really think about their lives.
Yeah.
Instead of just, I can handle this. Mm-hmm. No big deal. I'm not going to die. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And there are other ways to reward your players, but on experience. There's nothing that says you even have to level in D&D. It's not a requirement.
Yeah, you guys weirded me out in my game. I was like, you guys, I think we're getting around the time to level up. And like most of you were like, no, I'm fine.
Yeah.
What do you mean you're fine? Aren't you guys looking at like higher levels of your character sheets and going, man, if I were only level 7, I'd have this ability.
No.
Nope. All right.
It's not the interesting part of the game.
All right.
Yeah, and that's not playing outside the mechanics. That's just not leaning into the growth.
I think that's what the problem was, is because I live with Sean, and Sean was like, once I get to here, I'm going to have this, and that's going to be like where my character build really comes into its own. And so I kept hearing that, and then, you know, I talked to you and Steve, and you and Steve were just like, no, I'm fine.
Yeah. This is good.
This is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've okay, I'm going to get
different
away
different players,
yeah.
different styles.
Different players, different styles.
Yep. But the whole idea is like, upgrade their house. Give them followers.
Yeah, give them a bigger spaceship.
Give them gear.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of our storytellers is gifting their players magical items.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, sometimes they have a little curse or something on them, but, you know, they're still magic items, and that's important. You know, they come up with their own level of concerns, so.
It's a sentient item. It speaks. Oh, it speaks? Yes, but it only speaks in riddles and show tunes. Oh, God, it's cursed!
It's definitely cursed. Oh, yes.
Do you want to get some questions?
Yeah, I think we need to answer some of these, but yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I will say this. Kaliki and I had a long discussion.
Yeah, I saw you guys were going on for like an entire day and a half, Kilkey and you.
Yeah, yeah. It was fun. We had, it was a good discussion. It actually brought up some ideas while I was going through it, but it's fun to have these. Like, because again, like, they're not local.
Yeah, sure.
They're not quite even sure about the difference between OSR or narrative. Like, mm-hmm. they're like, these seems like foreign concepts to me.
Right, right.
In total. So
and
let's
maybe
talk
they
about
are.
That.
Maybe this is just an American thing. I don't even know, you know?
It is and it isn't.
Yeah.
Like, our terminologies, we love labeling the crap out of things.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure we
so,
do.
Like, because we are, and I will flat out say this, because we are so large,
mm-hmm.
we have millions of people who do something in one way. Or another way.
That's true.
And
that's true.
We have to be able to define what those things are.
Yeah.
To even be able to have a discussion about it.
Yeah.
Whereas,
yeah.
like, I'm in Germany.
Mm.
How many millions of people are playing Cyberpunk Red versus BattleTech? Right.
What 1% of our population is like 340 million people, or mm-hmm. 34 million people.
Yeah.
You know, for no, that'd be 10%. 3.4 million people would be 1% of our population. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And like. We already know that there's more than 3.4 million people playing role-playing games in the United States.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would dare say, and this is, I'd be really interested to see the numbers, but I dare say that in the United States, there is probably more than 5% of the population that plays
mm-hmm.
at some level. And that's a lot of people.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And they're all doing things differently.
Mm-hmm.
So...
All right, so Kilkey asks, what do you consider to be the competing draws between OSR and narrative RPGs? I mean, if I had to boil it down, I think that the draw of OSR is that I think if you want to engage with a game, you play OSR, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to engage with mechanics and dice
mm-hmm.
and play it like it is a game,
mm-hmm.
you know, where smart decisions have to be made, tactical decisions have to be made, you play OSR.
I would agree with that.
If you are less worried about the game mechanics and more, and you want the game mechanics to get out of your way so you can tell a story,
mm-hmm.
you play narrative.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that is pretty succinct. I can't really say much different than
mm-hmm.
that. Yeah, no, that's pretty solid.
And then Nevim asks, what are the key elements for a game to be OSR? I think that's basically the same question.
Yeah, the pillars really are the key to OSR.
Yes, yes.
If you meet those three pillars, then mm-hmm. you are OSR.
And once again, that is, story is emergent from the mechanics,
mm-hmm.
Player skill over character skill,
mm-hmm.
and advancement through achievement, not through vertical progression.
Right, whereas narrative is cooperative storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to leave it there.
Your character is its own entity and a separate thing from you.
Correct. And it is what you experience everything through.
Yes.
So.
And the last question is it possible to have a narrative OSR game?
I think it is possible, but it is not a narrative. Let me rephrase this. It is possible to have an OSR narrative game, but I don't think it is possible to have a narrative OSR game.
Elaborate.
So
I think I'm on board with you.
I can take, but I can take Merkborg and make it a narrative game and play with its rule set.
Yes.
Not hand wave anything.
Yes.
But 100% come into that game with players who have ideas and characters and a narrative story that follows the lines that go within it.
Yes.
But what I can't do is follow to the letter the rules of Merkborg or original D&D and develop it into a narrative, because by doing so, I am moving away from the rules to craft.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
And,
okay, Rob.
And 100, that is the evolution. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go backwards.
Yeah.
But you can go forward and carry it with you, which is what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
You're effectively altering things as you move.
That's forward and backwards chronologically, you mean?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Through our rules and systems.
All right.
So,
all right, Rob.
Speaking of which. So, next week is our system spotlight.
What are we doing, Rob?
We are doing tiny D6.
Aw, itsy bitsy little D6.
That's
little cute
right.
little guys.
I'm actually going to focus. We're going to kind of talk around Tiny Tavern specifically.
Yeah.
But really, like, Tiny D6 is designed to be a 3D6, fits on a 3x5 note card characters, ready to play kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is meant to be very rules light, very portable with ideas and themes. And settings, there's a lot of them actually out there.
You know, the more you describe it, the more it sounds like it reminds me of one of my other favorite games, and that's Warrior Rogue and Mage by Stargazer.
You'll feel some of those vibes.
Of just like, it's super simple.
Yep.
It's just a couple dice.
Yep.
Your character is like 3 stats, you know.
Yeah, it is a very simple system
mm-hmm.
that you can, like, if there's a challenge, the rule is the same.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, you can, there's
just
minor,
roll a check.
There's minor tweaks to it
mm-hmm.
that, you know, that people have thrown in to help guide you under certain circumstances. But other than that, you don't have to know those
mm-hmm.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, I dare say when, you know, where it's, you know, like, well, like Savage World, it's easy. Take a D6 plus your stat, roll. Right?
Yep. Is it are one of those dice 4 or higher?
I'm literally going to look at you and
Good,
say,
you succeeded.
You're working too hard.
Yeah.
Like, Tiny D6 looks at you and says, you're working too hard.
Yeah.
You might want to tone that down just a little bit.
Jeez. Oh, look at Mr. Crunch over here.
Exactly. 100%. So I look forward to talking to you guys about that and actually getting myself a little more excited, because that is what I'm running in my next game that I'm going to be doing. I'm going to do some set sessions for that.
Alrighty.
So.
Alrighty, in the meantime then, you can find us on Twitter at @ST_Conclave, on Instagram at @ST_Conclave. Listen to us live every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on mixlr.com/storyteller-conclave. And join us up on our Discord. We love hearing from our listeners there. Shoot us some questions, talk to the other great storytellers there. You can find that website, you can find that link on our Twitter as well as our website, storytellerconclave.com.
Yes, we'd like to thank our Patreon members who support us every single month, especially our named members. You can, they are Knox in the Box, Subject, The Arcane Asylum, Veteran, Huluvu, Sam, Sean, and Sparkle Motion. We appreciate all your support. Our pre-show music is by Arcane Anthems. You can find that at Instagram.com or on Patreon at Arcane Anthems. Our intro music is Beyond the Warriors by Geefrog. You can find that at geefrog.bandcamp.com or on YouTube Music. And our outro music, which is Only Our Footprints in the Sand by Midair Machine, you can find them at freemusicarchive.org.
And a big shout out to our families, Vicky and Sean. Thank you so much for loving and supporting us. All of our friends who've come to our tables with gigantic stacks of characters to be ground through in our meat grinder dungeons over the years. And you, every single one of our listeners. We love you guys so much.
Love you too.
Good night.